Your story is waiting for you today. Your story has something new to say. But your story will only come out to play when you're alone. Alone. Alone in a room with invisible people.
The following episode may contain swearing. Alone in a Room with Invisible People is brought to you by hollyswritingclasses.com.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Gallardo, and I'm the host of Alone in a Room with Invisible People. I am here with author and teacher Holly Lyle, and today's topic is when you hate what you write, which is such a cheerful topic. But yeah, so before we get into that, Holly, what have you done this week? How was your week?
I had a really, really good week. I have been working on The Owner's Tale, and in spite of the fact that it's taking longer for me to finish than I had anticipated, my experiment in non-sequential writing, in which I have been building just the owner's part of the story first, which covers about, I'm guessing about 50 years of the owner's life.
Wow.
And yeah,
that's a long time.
And I've been doing it scene by scene and just doing that part of the story. This week, I finished up The Owner's Tale. I finally figured out who it was that the owner is. I mean, I knew who he was, but I didn't know how he had become who he was. And I got his whole story, and my God. But anyway, this week I'm doing Melly and Shay, or started doing the Melly and Shay scenes. And the Melly and Shay scenes take, by my best guess, about 3 to 5 hours. And they are interspersed. So I've got this storyline running about 50 years, interspersed with this storyline running about 5 hours. And it's coming together really cool. And I'm so excited about it. And I love it so much. And this is a new thing for me. So because I always write sequentially, but I didn't know what price the owner had paid to become who he is now. And yeah. I learned that. And seriously, oh my God. So, and then I am working on lessons for how to write a novel. And this week, I just want to talk about my students this week because this has been amazing. I've been writing lessons and they've been doing lessons. And the thing that they have been doing is building out from the artifact that they built in week one. And they are discovering all this amazing stuff that they didn't know they had built in, which is why you build the artifact. It's not so that you can put it in the book. You build the artifact so that it gets you out of your own way and lets you find a story naturally. Lets you find the story that's in your brain without having to slog around going, oh my God, what am I going to write about? And nobody is having that problem. And that is really cool. So anyway, what about your week?
My week was pretty good. I've got, I'm doing the Ghost Anthology, and I almost done with, I think, number four, the fourth
cool
story. But I'm aiming for 6 to put out in an anthology on October 1st. And I'm just not sure it's going to happen. I have a whole bunch of artwork that I have to make for people. I have deadlines on all of those. And I also have Leaving Wanda Lucia, the second book in the Wanda Lucia world. And I know I've said I'm going to put that aside. But it's like the more I write other stuff, the more that one keeps coming back to me and telling me, okay, well, you got to get back to us.
The muse wants what it wants.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm also going through How to Write a Novel, the course that you're working on. Like, and it's drawing me towards this idea that I want to write too. And it's just so much all at once. And I want to go through that course while as you're writing it, because I want to be part of that course in the beginning. And I want to be able to help. But yeah, I want to be a part of the course as you're going through it, because I want to be able to find different things that don't necessarily translate to me very well, so that if people in the future are like me, then they're going through a course that I've helped kind of, you know, not fix, but give you the alternate point of view from somebody more like me, so that that can be fixed in the future.
Yeah, that
or changed or
that is the big benefit for me in doing a splinters version of the class. It's a lot of work because I'm going in and finding things that aren't connecting to people. Because they're saying, okay, well, but I don't understand what I'm doing this for, or I don't understand how this works. I don't even understand how to do this. And then I have to figure out how to translate what's in my head into something that other people in different brains can understand. And it's, but by doing that, it makes the course much more accessible to everyone who takes it in the future. It's just a little hard on the guys who are taking it right now.
Well, it's also hard on you, too, because you end up having to, it's not like you're putting out this course that works for everybody and then everybody can just take it. Mm-hmm. The Splinters course is also amazing because the people that are in it understand that it might not work for them right away.
Right. So then they come in and they post on the board, and then I have to figure out Path B, which, you know, we did that live session on YouTube for Path B for the first one, and then I had to do something with a second set of issues where I just posted that in the form and redid part of lesson two, where I left something out, because to me it was just perfectly logical. You do this and then you do this, and I put the worksheets in there. Obviously, everybody's going to know how to go from this one to that one. No,
yeah,
I lost everybody on that, and fortunately, everybody said, "Okay, but I don't know how to get from here to here." And I looked at it and I could see where I'd gotten from there to there, but I hadn't shown anybody else how. So,
yeah. That's like the dot and the line that confused the fuck out of a lot of people.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah. And to me, that is just the most. But see, that's because everybody has a different brain, and everybody's brain is build it yourself. You know, there's no toolkit. So you go in from the time you were born, you start building your brain. And your brain works differently than everybody else's on the planet. And the fact that we can communicate through writing is a freaking miracle.
So speaking of communicating through writing, let's figure out what happens when you hate what you write.
Okay.
So go ahead and take it away.
Yeah. Okay. Well, first off, that happens to everyone. And when I say everyone, I mean absolutely everyone. Sooner or later, you are going to write something, and it's going to start well, and it's going to go someplace where you think it's going to be awesome. And then you are going to do something that just makes you detest what you have written. And my example story for this is Talismana, where I had this really cool idea. It was based on you and your dog, Fred, man.
Yeah, Fred.
And yes, I know, I miss Fred. It was this opportunity to put you in a book. And it wouldn't be the first time I'd done it. You were in a number of, you and your brothers, and now your brothers, have been in a number of books that I have written. But it was just this.
So this was me as an artist, too.
Yes, you as an artist. Yeah. Back before you were actually doing anything significant with your art. And
it was all just mainly jewelry.
Yeah. And it was, I put the wrong character in there. And I made the wrong character essential to the story. And the story just died on me. And it's there. You can do absolutely anything to make the book into something you hate, and or any story. You can break the plot. You can break a character. You can just look at your writing and start picking your writing apart and saying, "Oh my God, no real writer ever used that word." Where you just become hypercritical about every single comma and period, and this is a normal part of writing. It's just a part that sucks, and it's a part that you have to learn how to get past. So I know you have written some things that you have not been.
The worst thing, I guess, that I could say was everything right after fan fiction, because I started off writing original fiction when I was 11 or 12, and not very good. No, it's 11 or 12 year old fiction, and I'm not a prodigy, so it's relatively bad. And I read a lot of Stephen King and Dean Koontz, so you know, if it wasn't romance, it was these really weird, bizarre horror movie, like, books. And the transition into fan fiction came from Smallville, I think. No, there was Law and Order. But it was just me turning into a teenager with a lot of hormones and then starting to write either these kind of more sensual things or you were looking at like a whole bunch of like crime mystery stuff. And I got into that kind of drug of having a world already established, having characters already established. And it didn't matter. I went through different genres and different characters, different shows. I wrote some things for Buffy, and it was just, all of my work was very popular. Not all of it, but a lot of my work was very popular. Mm-hmm. I mean, just this morning, I still, and this is what, 20 years later, roughly, I just got another like on one of my stories at fanfiction.net, and it's crazy. But it's there's this drug to that fan fiction, and a lot of people never get out of it because it's like a drug. It can be addictive. And then when you try to write your own original fiction, it's so much harder. That it's more of a challenge because nothing is already built for you. It's not like it's taking off that training wheel, but going to a unicycle instead of a bike.
Yes, that's a nice analogy.
it's very, very difficult. You have to then, you are responsible for the entire world. And I found that a lot of my main characters were very drab and very boring and not good enough to fill an entire book or an entire story or anything like that. My side characters were always pretty much okay, but it just, I had such an incredibly hard time, not transferring, but growing up as what I see is fan fiction was really nice trainer. It was a way to get my confidence up, to get my feedback, to see that I could create a story and work within characters that people love.
Yeah, and you were doing some pretty good work with plotting. You never had a problem of not telling the story. I did read some of your stuff, and you know, stuff that, no, that's okay. So it was the stuff that you wouldn't mind me reading. I missed the Clark. Lex Luthor.
Clex.
Yeah, Clex, yeah. Yes.
Clark Lex. Yeah, that's actually one of the ones that just got favored this morning was Lex in the Lamborghini. But yeah, there's a lot of them were, yes. I had fun with those. But they were not inappropriate. They were inappropriate for mothers.
Yeah, they were not stuff your mom wanted to read, I guarantee you.
No. Yeah, but all of them, yeah, that's true. I had a really good idea of pacing. Mm-hmm. I had a really good idea of plotting. I got a lot of it came naturally. A lot of it, I'm sure, came from having a writer as a mother, reading all the time, also watching a lot of shows, fitting pacing to the shows. Mm-hmm. So I'm really adaptable. I'm very, very good at learning from what I see. And that's just what I needed to do with the with writing original work. It's just so much harder. It is so much more difficult to create, you know, original fiction. So I ended up hating all the stuff that I was writing for the longest time. And I couldn't go back to fan fiction. I kept trying.
Yeah.
But my brain, I had decided I had grown up, you know, and not to be insulting to anybody still writing fan fiction. That was just what my brain had decided. My left brain got tired of writing fan fiction. It was like, no, you have the capacity to create stuff on your own. So I just was not inspired by fan fiction anymore. Even a couple of years ago when I started to have some depression and was fighting my original stuff, I thought, okay, well, I could just go back and write a little bit of fan fiction to get my juices flowing again. No, Didn't work.
Yeah.
I have to write original fiction now. So you just, there's growing pains.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that that's one area where you can end up writing a lot of what you hate. But I also hated leaving Wanda Lucia for a little while.
Yes, you did. And the thing is, Wanda Lucia was, leaving Wanda Lucia is really good. It's so the fact that you hated that was one of the other problems that people have, which is you were too close to your own work and you were being hypercritical and not seeing what you had done right. And there were some areas in it where it wasn't flawless, but the core story and the characters and the progression, the conflicts, the romantic back and forth, your villain, that was all really strong stuff. And it was fun to read. And and that's the key right there. But you were just too close to it. And that's one of the things that a lot of people face is you're too close to your own work. And you're not seeing what you've made because you just finished making it and it's still steaming and you haven't walked away.
Yeah, and your description of it steaming is it's interesting. You know, a lot of people would agree with that. Yes, it is steaming.
Yes, but see, that's just it, is you can't see what you've left behind, and there's going to be a certain amount of stuff that's got to be shoveled out, but there is going to be some really good stuff in there too. So there is this thing where you are going to look at your work at some point and hate it. So you have to realize that no matter how much some of it may genuinely suck, and as someone who has written a whole lot of stuff that genuinely sucks, I can tell you you are right in that there is some stuff in there you're going to have to fix. But you have to step away because there is always something in your work that is worth saving. And it might not even in your early work be something really big. It might be, okay, again, I'm going to go back to Tadra Amu.
Oh, no, I knew that was coming.
Yes, oh, God, because she was the first good character I ever made. She was in the first good world I ever built. And she was in a story that was a steaming pile of crap. Oh, my God, it was horrible. And you know, Dragan Dankmire was...
Do you have this story? Because no. At this point, you have mentioned everything so many times, people want to read it.
No, it was handwritten. It was before, it was typed. It was typed on a manual typewriter on an old upright Underwood that I bought so that I could teach myself to type. And I had painted all of the keys on this manual Underwood white and put a little block with the keyboard layout up in front of me to keep my eyes up. And I would look at, from my keyboard layout taped to the wall in front of me down to my words to make sure that I was hitting the right keys. And and I was teaching myself to type while writing that story.
Yeah, you told me that's how you learned to type, and I copied you and learned to type myself like that.
Yeah, well, I was not going to take typing when I was in high school because that was the path to being a secretary back in the 1970s, and I had determined that's not where I was going. So I was just, if you don't know how to type, you can't be a secretary. Voila.
Yeah. Okay, no problem.
Yes, et voila. I have solved the problem. No. But anyway... Yeah, that story does not exist, and you may thank me later, but that story has become part of the owner's tale, the part of it that was worth saving. Good God, almost 30 years later?
Yeah, it's 30.
Holy shit, yes. Yes, from when I was 20, it's 32, because I was 25 when I was working on that thing. Jesus. Anyway... Yeah, so you will make some things that are worth saving and might be worth becoming something that is this piece of an epic years later, but to get that kind of perspective, you have to walk away and not destroy it. And the temptation to destroy something that you see as horrible can be enormous.
I try to tell people not to destroy their artwork, too.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people... they even pieces of paper that they draw on. And I think this came from you because you're always saying, you know, don't throw it away. And it's the same thing with writing. I think that's what you were teaching us.
Yes.
But then even with my drawings, you were telling me, don't throw these away because you want to see them someday.
Right.
And as much as I hated a lot of them, I still kept them. And I'm glad that I did. And I see, oh, you know, I threw it away. It's like, no, freaking save that.
Right.
You might be mad at where you are now, but you'll grow. And with writing, some of those story ideas are not that bad.
Right, right. Some of you can have magnificent ideas and simply not yet have the skills to write them. And that's okay. If you hang on to what you have written, you can go back later and dig it back out and go, okay, well, this sucks, but the idea is great. And I can use that in this thing that I'm doing now with these better skills that I have now. And also, the other thing is you can say, oh my God, I've gotten better. If you have the old stuff there, you can look at it and go, oh, wow, I so don't suck like I used to. I am so much better than I used to be.
You know what? It doesn't even. Yeah, I'm laughing because I've been there. I'm laughing because I literally got so excited. Remember when I was going through all that paperwork because I was minimalizing and I was telling you about it? I found the first erotica I ever wrote. I think I was 14 or 15 or 16, something like that. And I had this huge crush on Jon Stewart from The Daily Show.
Oh, my God.
And I will say, in the 90s, he was very cute. And I don't know why I had a crush on him. It was just the hormones. You know me and my crushes. Most of them lasted 20 minutes.
Yes. So except for Gary Oldman.
Don't speak ill of my man. That is my other husband. He just doesn't know it. Tony is aware, however.
Okay.
But, yeah, so I found this horrible thing. I was so excited. I was like, oh my God, I can't wait to read it. Because I remember writing it to two Melissa Etheridge songs. And every time I hear those songs, I feel like I want to write some erotica, or I think about that story. And it's just, it was god awful. I remembered it being full of tension and there being this taboo because I was, you know, I was writing about sex. Ooh. And I was a kid, you know, I was a teenager. So, of course, you know, and I was a goody two shoes teenager. So I know nothing about that stuff. But it was just horrible. And it made me feel good because it was so cute. It was so much growth. But even if I had looked at that piece, even a year later, it would have shown me how much growth I had in just a single year.
Right. Right. And I will note that I was aware that both of my children were writing erotica when they were their early teens. This was not anything that they were doing behind my back. My take on it was, hey, I know where they are. I know what they're doing. If they want to write erotica, that's okay with me.
But yeah, you explained to a six-year-old where babies came from.
Yes, I did.
Me with Tinker Toys, and your philosophy has always been just be honest. So we definitely didn't hide the fact that we were writing erotica.
No. Nope. So I knew.
Right. You're absolutely right. There is this growth that happens and you want to save everything and you don't know what you could end up using later, because I have gone back and pulled out story ideas that have been in my head for certain elements of different, like a screenplay that I had written Silver Lining when I was 17. Mm-hmm. I think I finished it. And like those stories, there are elements that stayed with me that I have put into other things that have been finished now.
Right.
So you're absolutely right. It's there's always something worth saving.
Yeah. Yeah. And there is something worth saving, whether it's worth saving to look at later and go, well, I've gotten better, or, oh my God, I know what to do with this now, 30 some years later. 30. Oh my God. Okay. So the thing here is that your job is to figure out which. It's to give yourself the room in which to figure out which? Is it something that I'm going to look back at later and laugh and say, oh, I was such a cute kid, I've grown? Or is it something that you're going to look back later and go, oh my God, this, now I know what to do with it. And I do have to say, I thought when I started writing, I thought everything I wrote was brilliant. Okay?
I've never been there.
I was at the absolute other end of the spectrum where I was unable to see how bad what I was writing was. And I thought that everything was just amazing and brilliant and groundbreaking and brand new. And then as I started writing more and learning, I would go back and go, oh my God, how did I ever think that was good? Holy crap. And that's part of why it took me 7 years to learn how to do a revision. Is initially, I didn't see anything wrong with what I'd written. I was reading it and going, oh my God, this is great. You know, this is as good as everything I'm reading out there. And the fact that it might have been as good as a couple of the things that I was reading out there is just sad.
It does. Doesn't speak very much for the things you were reading.
No, it does not speak well for what I was reading.
But, yeah.
But, and it took me a while to understand my limitations and to recognize my limitations and then to learn how to become, to move beyond them. Because if you think everything you are doing is great or even good or even readable and you are new, the odds are that you were coming at it from my direction and not Becky's, where Becky was under no illusions and I thought I was the next god of writing. And it took me having a professional writer named Stephen Lay to read through what I had written. And maybe, you know, 100 editors that I nearly killed in a couple of magazines that I did by sending them my terrible stories. And Charles Ryan's sending me back this rejection note that said, much, 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 too much exposition. I had to count the muches.
That one always kills me.
Yes.
That one always kills me. I'm like, fuck, I love that.
Yes. And to let you understand where I was in my writing at the time, I had to then look up exposition because I didn't know what it was. Yes. Becky is laughing so hard she has tears running down her cheeks right now. I am just letting you know.
I'm sorry. I've heard that story. I don't know how many times. It slays me every time.
Yes. Well, you know, if you are the great god of writing and you don't know what exposition is, step back.
Yeah.
Step away from the keyboard. You have a little learning to do.
I just have this picture of this dude reading this story and going like, oh,
yes,
my God. Oh. And then just writing that many muches. It's like it got me again.
Yes, there were five. I had to sit here and count off on my fingers to make sure I had all five muches before the last much.
And I wish you still had that one.
And Charles Ryan, bless his heart, was the man who gave me a career. Because after I looked up exposition and found out what I had done wrong, I started actually learning how to not suck. And he was the guy who bought both of my sonnets, too.
Oh,
yes,
cool.
My little sex bot sonnet and my computer hard drive crash sonnet.
I'm going to stop linking those in the show notes because you're just going to mention them every three episodes anyway. But I like the fact that I hope he noticed that you were the same one that had, you know, all the muches.
Oh.
All the muches exposition.
Yeah, that would be really cool. That would, because
but he probably didn't.
I owe that man. He was, yeah. After more than 100 rejections, he was the single best rejection I ever got. Which was that one, which told me what I did wrong, although I had to look it up to find out.
Yeah, yeah, and it was helpful.
Yes, so that man, best rejection I ever got, and first two sales. I love him. I don't know where he is right now, but I love that man.
So, all right, so there's always something worth saving, you said. So what is, how do we look at what we've written, what we hate in our writing? How do we figure out what it is that's driving us crazy or whatever it is that we hate, and how to maybe fix it.
Okay. There are a few steps to this. None of them are terribly difficult. Some of them are a little bit tough, but the first one is really, really simple. Just walk away. Let the story get cold. And depending on how new you are, let the story get cold for longer if you are brand new. If you have not been writing for 4 or 5 years, I would say you would need to have maybe 20 or 30 stories written before you start developing enough of a sense of who you are as a writer to be able to trust your own judgment even a little bit. Okay, that first 20 or 30 stories, and I know that sounds like a lot, it isn't. Over a period of a lifetime, you can write thousands of stories. So, and probably will. If you love this and if this is what you want to do, you are going to write, I've written at this point tens of millions of words of fiction. And you don't have any objectivity when you first start. So write more stories, but put the stories that you have written away unread and let them sit for a while you're writing more stories, so that by the time you go back and read the first one, you have maybe 4 or 5 other stories written. Go develop a cycle. Short stories, and this is where flash fiction is really good, is that you can develop stories very quickly and do maybe 10 flash fiction stories and then go back and read the first one. And you have been getting progressively a little better with each story. But you need that breathing room.
Yeah, that's what I was doing with the pen name that I was self-publishing.
Yes.
I would write a story, set it aside, write another story, set it aside. By the time I was working on the third story and finished it, I would go back to the first one, edit it, and send it to the betas. I had a very good system going on.
Yeah. Yeah, and you were producing a lot of work, and your work was selling, and yeah, you were developing a fan base there.
Yeah, yeah. Barnes & Noble just switched up their terms of service with self-publishing writers and kicked, God, like 70% of the romance and erotica genre out, and I was just one of those that got kicked out.
Yeah.
So I could go back, but I'm moving on to writing stuff in my actual name.
Right.
So,
right. Well,
but yeah, I had a cycle going, and by the time I finished the third story, the first one was cool enough that I found all sorts of errors. I could find any plot holes, anything that I didn't like. But, you know, so that's something that if you get into a regular schedule with, it's something that can stick with you and end up being very beneficial to your career.
Yeah. Yeah, that was one of the problems that I had starting out too, was that I didn't realize a personal letter from an editor telling me what was wrong with what I had written was a good thing. I didn't realize that I had made enough of a connection that editor saw at least a tiny bit of promise in me. So I didn't revise. I didn't go back afterwards and fix the story or rewrite the story. So I had this long, slow growth period because I didn't know there were other things that I could do. I just wrote a story. I would send it out. I would send it to maybe 3 or 4 different places. It would get rejected at all of them. And then I would not go back and rewrite it because it was just, to me, the story, once it was written, was done. And it didn't occur to me for ages that no, that was just a first draft. And it, like I said, 7 years. 7 years to learn how to revise, following which everything started selling. But, you know, that's we're trying to get you out of that process and into, okay, well, let me learn how to get better now, not 7 years from now. So
the first step is become objective.
Right.
Just step away. Work on something else.
Right. The second step is to become scientific. Okay. And this sounds very cold and hard and shiny stainless steel. And to a certain extent, it is. The objectivity with your work requires that you understand what has to be in a good story. And what has to be in a good story is protagonist, antagonist, conflict, setting, twist, and then tone and theme. And, excuse me, when you have this, then you have at least the pieces of a good story. And until you have this, you're writing something that's broken. So you have to understand that you have to have a good guy, a bad guy, or a conflict of something that your main character has to overcome. You have to have a place in which this occurs. You have to have a change, something that the reader does not expect that resolves the problem. You have to have a theme, something that the story is about that is bigger than just the character's actions. You have to have this passion, and you have to have a voice. You have to have, whether you're telling it in a jokey, smart-ass fashion, or whether you're being suspenseful and dead serious, that's your tone. And you go through and you look at each of these pieces and you say, okay, is this here? Do I have a protagonist? And is the protagonist something somebody else is going to want to read about and hope to see succeed? Because there are an awful lot of horrible protagonists in beginner fiction. People that the writer is trying to go to be dark and deep and complex, and he ends up writing, or she ends up writing, this jerk, this complete, total, unlikable asshole who you want to see die. And if the writer's ending is then the cliched, and then he died, everybody goes, yay, and nothing more by that writer. Thank you, and I'm on my way. So you don't want to be the writer who writes that story. You want to give the reader someone to care about and make your character wonderful in some way. I'm not saying you have to write perfect people. You don't have to write Mary Sue's. You don't have to write the person that has no flaws.
Please don't.
Yeah, please Mary don't, Sue's. In fact. But you have to give the reader a reason to give a shit about whether your character lives or dies. And you don't want them to be giving the shit in hoping that the character will die. You just don't want to write that character. Because that's...
Unless it's a bad guy.
Right. Okay, well now, if you were... But see, stories written from the point of the view of the villain are very, very hard for most readers to get into.
Oh, I wasn't thinking about the point of view. Oh, but you can have a point of view, too, where it's still it's not the main character, but it's a villain.
Oh, right, where you have the antagonist.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, yes. You can always give the reader somebody to hate or fear or to be their worst nightmare. And that will and if you then give your main character a way to deal with that character, they're happy. Because that's if you have hit their worst nightmare and given your main character a way to get around that and survive, you win.
My problem was always the protagonists and the conflicts. Usually my antagonists were good. I had good settings. I had decent little twists, you know, sometimes. Mm-hmm. But just the main characters that I used to write were so bland, I guess because I was used to that fan fiction where the characters are already built and they have all of their the personal twists and personal things that create conflict with each other. Mm-hmm. So I know that was really, really hard trying to write main characters that I liked, I enjoyed. All my secondary characters were always pretty good. But yeah, that was that. And finding conflict, like you said, it's not argument. So you have to find ways to incorporate conflict. However, it was really, if you're objective and you are being scientific, you can start to narrow down and find out what's wrong in your story. It does not take that long.
Yeah.
Most of the time. I know sometimes it can be trickier.
And you have, with Leaving Wanda Lucia, since that's the most recent thing I have read by you, you got past that. Because and the way you did it, I think, is really telling. Is you took a lot of pieces of your own personal existence, your own personal struggle. You transmuted them so that they are not the same in the character, but because I know you, I know where they came from in your life and what fueled these various things. And I can see what you did that that changed them into this stranger, who nonetheless is a very real and very likable main character, who has a compelling story that is very different from yours, but nonetheless very real. And
I still think I could work on personalities a little bit more, but I think that that's just something that all writers, you know, you just have to keep growing with your work.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to ever be perfect. Perfect is, what is it in How to Think Sideways?
Oh,
perfect is safe?
Perfect is the thing. I don't remember. It's perfect never finishes.
Perfect never finishes. Yeah. So that's, you're never going to send your work out if you're waiting for it to be perfect, because you will always grow. You will always get better. There is no perfect.
Right.
But
and I think that's one of the beauties of writing, is that while there is no perfect, there is most definitely good enough. And
you always get better.
Yes.
There's always this opportunity to grow and learn more and get better.
Yes, there is no best book you will ever write except your next one, because you can always do, you know, this one is the best I can do right now. Great, awesome. Okay, but the next one is going to be the best I can do right now, and it's going to be better. And the next one, and it's I love that about writing. There is just no top end. There's no point at which you go, okay, well, I can't do any more with this.
So after becoming scientific, what's the next step?
You have to study what works. And this is not just what works in your own writing. This is what works in other people's writing. And not just in the genre you read, but in genres you don't read. And in fact, more importantly, in genres that up until now you have not read, because one of the coolest things that happens for a writer is that you can read a bunch of nonfiction, a bunch of fiction in genres you have never read, and you will find out shit you never even imagined existed in both nonfiction and fiction, that then it starts to set up camp in the back of your mind. It gives your muse new toys to play with, and all of a sudden, you are the person in How to Write a Novel who is sitting there going, well, but I don't know where this is coming from, because I have never written fantasy in my entire life, and all of my artifacts are giving me fantasy. Okay, listen to your muse. Let's go ahead. But so you study, you expand on what you know, and then you also learn things like you learn what a theme is. And a theme is, it is the reason that you're writing the book. And the subtext is the hidden story. Okay, I'm going to go back to Bones of the Past, because Bones of the Past has a deep subtext to it. It was my frustration with being raised deeply religious by missionary, by on-again, off-again, lay missionary parents. I don't want to give anybody the impression my parents were ministers. They weren't. But they were dorm parents at a children's home in Alaska. They were going to be the financial officer and the guest house supervisor in a friend's, a Quaker mission in Guatemala. We were in Costa Rica, and I was raised not just with religion, but with an ever-changing series of religions. And I, read the whole Bible through straight back to front three times, read every word of that thing. And the effect it had on me, I'm not going to get into that, but...
but it's in Bones of the Past, that's the theme of it.
Yes, but my... The story of my fight with religion became this subtext in Bones of the Past. And it also my experiences with jungles in Central America, which scared the ever-loving crap out of me. People were going, oh, yes, the rainforest. Oh, no, not the rainforest. I've been there, my friend. It's a scary damn place. So... it was tough, but I worked the religious angle into these trees. And then I wrote the book and I buried it deep, because the thing you don't want to do if you have a theme and if you have a subtext is you don't want to hammer your reader over the head with it. You want it to be in there for you, yourself, so that you know why you're writing the book. But how anybody else interprets it is entirely up to them. And
so
yeah, a friend of mine read the book. Her husband had just died of cancer. He was younger than her. He was young. He was in his late 20s, early 30s, and had just died of cancer. And she was absolutely devastated. And she read the book. And what she got out of it was this sense of, okay, this is a metaphor for cancer, and this is how you survive as the person who lost somebody to cancer. And that was not what I had put in the story at all. But it was.
Wow.
Right. Because that's what subtext does. So if you learn, you are going to study what works, and you are going to learn how to create these pieces that work. And you build them out of your life. You build your tone, your theme, your subtext out of who you are. And then you bury it so deep that people can take whatever they need to find out of it. And you have no control over that, but you don't want control over that because you...
So that's studying what works. That's right. Trying to find other people that have done theme, tone, subtext,
right.
Stuff like that.
Right. And okay. digging through that and reading more. And the only thing you can do as a writer that is ever going to pay you back beyond anything you imagine is to read way outside of the genre in which you write. Way, way, way
and
outside.
And read nonfiction too, yeah.
Oh, God, yes. Yes, that's nonfiction. A good nonfiction is, well, good nonfiction is everything. From the point of view of a fiction writer, it's everything you don't know and can learn.
Yeah.
Yes. And then after that, once you have read more broadly and once you have looked at what you're doing, you identify what broke. And this is essentially learning how to revise. But, you know, it's protagonist, antagonist, conflict, twist, setting, theme, tone, subtext, all of that. You look at what you've written and you say, okay, this is the piece that broke, because the odds are pretty good that you still had something good in there. And you want to save what's good. And you only want to fix what broke. And then you are not looking at the scorched earth approach to writing fiction, which is, oh my God, this sucks. Burn it, burn it, burn it now.
And it's so tempting to do that too, because I've gone through two revisions now and I've only finished the one, and the temptation is I'm just going to start over from scratch. And I even saw people in the forums saying that too. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, don't do that. Cause I've been where you've been or where you are. I had that feeling too. Mm-hmm. No, you can save what you wrote. It's more work to go back and start over from scratch, because then you're going to go back to the revision and say, oh shit, I got to start over from scratch again. Mm-hmm.
Right, right. The only thing that not finishing your work by revising it teaches you is how to quit. And most people already know how to quit. The thing you don't want to do is, you know, incorporate a process of, oh my God, this sucks, I quit, and then start over from scratch. Learn from your mistakes. And the only way you can learn from your mistakes is to first find them and to second fix them. Because once you have found your mistakes and have fixed your mistakes, then even if the story still doesn't sell, even if it still isn't a brilliant work of amazing fiction that changes the world and alters for all time the high watermark upon which literature is built, okay? Even if it's just a cute little story, that is a success for you. And it starts building this pattern of success in which you learn how to get better by identifying what broke and then learning how to fix it. It's like buying a new car every time your car breaks. You don't do that. Nobody can afford to do that. And you can't afford to do it either, because you have a limited amount of time on this planet. And there are only so many stories you're going to get a chance to write. So you don't buy a new car every time the old car breaks. You learn how to fix the old car, get it up and running again, and drive it to the parking, to the place where you start the new car.
So you become, so breaking it down so far, you're basically looking at, I hate this piece. So you step away from it so you can have objectivity. You look at trying to identify in your story, your scientific area, you know, your protagonist, antagonist, conflict, heading,
right.
Setting, and
is
twist.
Everything that the story needs to have in there.
Yeah. So you identify that. Then you kind of take a little bit of time. You try to find, you say study what works. So I'm assuming you find things that were good in your genre.
Mm-hmm.
trying to find something that, and that's what I've done too with some of the romance stuff, is you're looking for something that was done well, mm-hmm. that moves you, maybe a favorite story would be good too, to go back. And then you identify what broke in your story, with packs and theme, subtext and tone.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
Okay.
And then, if you are just completely stymied, you have gone through this thing and it feels broken to you. Then you go to this is absolutely worst case. You have absolutely no idea what's wrong with it. You go to a trusted second opinion. You go to somebody who, for me, it was Stephen Lay, who read that story. And then, you know, Charles Ryan with a story that I sent off that I thought was, it was Quakers in Space. Honest to God, it was. I had Quakers on a spaceship who were making a colony in space. And I got into the whole Friends history and how they got into space. And there was no story there. It was much, 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 much too much exposition. But it's putting your work in front of somebody who knows what good work is. And
just to make a quick note here, Holly does not have time to be the trusted second opinion. Right now, as of now, she's even working 14 to 18 hour days or 16 hour days or something like that, just to get everything she has done. And this is pretty much every time she does a class too.
Yeah.
So yeah, please don't email us asking for her to take a look at your work. Go to Holly's forums. There are places for you to go in and find some opinions there.
Yeah.
And the mods and some of the writers on there are published. They are great.
Oh, I have the best people on the internet in my forum.
Yeah.
Honest to God. They are wonderful people.
Yeah.
And we have strict rules. And, you know, we have a no politics, no religion rule. It is absolutely ferociously guarded. And because it is the thing that allows all of our people to stay warm and friendly with each other and be helpful and avoid the two things that broke the last community that I built and ran that had 10,000 people and that I walked away from in just sheer utter.
Yeah. So no politics, no religion,
right.
Just writing. And you know, got to follow the rules of critiquing in there. So if you are somebody who's tender and new and you don't know where you're going wrong, Holly's forums, they're free. Just create a free account.
Yeah.
You do get the flash fiction thing, the flash fiction course.
And
with
this
it.
Is a safe and place because anybody who ever attacks another writer is gone. They no longer have access to the forums. It is a hard and fast rule. And we have specific rules on how to give critiques built into the terms of service. And you need to read them. But this is a safe place and a community of supportive writers who will not attack you. And
Yeah. Because Holly knows, you know, she built it specifically because this world needs a place like that.
Yes.
So, Alrighty, so what else is there after, you know, trying to find a second opinion, as long as it's trusted and, you know, what are we looking
at? Okay, well, you've basically, once you have heard back, then you have to take a deep breath. And there you have three alternatives at this point, okay? Because at the point where you are looking at the story and you have already passed by the urge to take a match and burn it, and you have either identified what you think are the problems or have handed it off to somebody else who has for you identified the problems, and you have been an adult about it and said, okay, well, when they say that my antagonist is a wuss and my protagonist is an evil wench, then they have said it kindly and by giving me examples of places where the character actually did these things in the story with page numbers and everything so that I know this is a real thing, then you have three alternatives. You have the small approach, which is you can just rethink or rewrite the parts that broke. So overall, the story stays the same, but you turn your main character from evil wench into somebody kind of likable, who maybe, you know, she still has some flaws, but, you know, she's not Miss Perfect, but she isn't the devil in a dress. The second approach to that, if there were a lot of things wrong with it, you save the pieces that you love for a new or different story, where the story just simply did not work for you. But you have this one character, and this one character sits in the back of your mind for 30 years, 32 years, damn it. And then the larger thing is you just save the whole story. If everything feels broken, but there's a reason that you loved it, just put it aside and walk away and do something new.
Because you might not be ready to write that one.
Right, because yeah. I have several stories that I just freaking love. And one of them is the story that's still tentatively titled Dreaming the Dead. And I woke up from a dream in which my very first publisher said, look, you know, this is what you need to write. And he had died a few years before. And so that's, you know, the dead do not show up in my dreams. And he did. And I went, oh, wow. And I woke up and it was still a good idea. If you wake up and you write the thing down and it's still a good idea, holy shit, that's a good idea. And yeah. So, and I'm still not quite there. I'm not yet ready for that story, but it's still there and it's still in broken form on my hard drive sitting and waiting for me to go back and do it. Someday.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, someday I'll get there.
So, why don't you kind of wrap this up and give our people their takeaway?
Okay. Little takeaway here. This is just the short, quick. First off, remember, no matter how much you hate what you have written right now, nothing you write is wasted. If worst case, it is the absolute worst piece of dreck anyone ever created on the planet, and that's highly unlikely because I know what I wrote, and I doubt you beat me. If it is terrible, you still learned from doing it, and your next chance is going to be an opportunity to do something better, okay? Second, learn to save what's good. Learn first off to identify what's good and then to save it. Third, learn to understand why what's bad is bad. And for me, that was the toughest lesson because I thought everything I was writing was brilliant initially. And then I started learning what writing really was. And I had to learn what exposition was before I could even break through to learning how to tell a story. Up until that point, I was doing massive world building, essentially, and trying to sell that and killing editors and publications in the process. And they were going, I'm going, that's it. I'm becoming an alcoholic and going to hide in a cave. So you learn why what's bad is bad, and you learn to identify it in your own writing. And finally, you learn to use what you learn to get better, so that even if what you're writing right now is crap, and if you are new, yeah, there are really pretty good odds that what you are writing right now is crap, you save it, you learn, and you get better. Because very, very few people become bestsellers with their first work, and very, very few people have the guts to finish enough stories to get good. But you can do this.
Yeah, and don't compare yourself to people that have gotten their first novel published and it went on to win an award or, you know, and I'm mocking Holly just here slightly, but don't compare yourself to Holly. Don't compare yourself to other writers who were on the New York Best Times seller because and they're brand new. Don't compare yourself to writers your age. Just let it all go. Your journey is different. Right. Your journey is what matters to you.
Right.
You can look at other people and say, hey, it's great that they're writing that much, but just don't set your success bars for things you cannot control.
Right. You are unique. And the stories that you will write that are important to you are unique. You are the first explorer on an entire continent, on a brand new shore untouched by human beings since the dawn of time. And every single thing in front of you is an opportunity, and it's new, and it's yours. And you are the only person who can ever go there. If you don't go there, nobody else will. Because this is your brain, this is your life, this is your experience, and this is what you bring to fiction. And nobody else but you can ever tell the stories that you can tell. So it's worth the struggle and the pain of getting through the parts where you're just learning in order to show people your continent, your world that belongs just to you and that nobody else can see but you unless you take the time to show them.
Yeah. So I guess that is it today. Do you have anything else that you wanted to add or?
That's just be kind to yourself. When you are writing, be kind, because nobody has to write the perfect work of unimaginable genius and brilliance. All you have to do is tell a story that matters to yourself. And you can do that.
Yeah, and it will matter to somebody
else. Yes.
And your writing can make a difference in somebody else's life, but you have to get it out there.
Yes, yes. In order for you to be able to change somebody else's life, first you have to change yours. And you change yours by becoming the person you want to be. And that's just one step at a time.
All righty. So we are gonna wrap it up here. We are on all of the regular socials. We are on Instagram and on Twitter at AIARWIP. And you can also use the hashtag Alone with Invisible People or Alone in a Room with Invisible People. We are also on Facebook with our Facebook page. It is Alone in a Room with Invisible People. We are on, I believe, Stitcher, Podbean, iTunes, Spotify. I think that's it. You can find us at alonewithinvisiblepeople.com. You can find us at hollylyle.podbean.com. You can email us at show@alonewithinvisiblepeople.com if you have any questions. And of course, we have the new forums in Holly's hollyswritingclasses.com. It is our podcast forum, Alone with Invisible People. And we will have basically it's a post for every single podcast episode that we have. You can create your own posts as well, but they are in there and you can, every week we're going to add some extra, the next episode topic.
And we have some really good discussions going on in there right now too. I was excited to see that.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, that was cheering me up seeing all of the, every time I walked in there, it was black or bold again. So I would click on it and So feel free to drop in there. It's a safer environment than leaving, public. If writers can be very, very protective of their work and their opinions and their ideas and stuff and their feelings. So if you're not comfortable leaving comments on the blog, the writers discussion area for the podcast is probably a better alternate.
Yes.
That has been what happens when you hate what you write and what you can do about it. That's it for this episode. We'll see you on the next episode.
Yes. Yes. Write and have fun and be brave.
And now a word from our sponsor.
You want to write, you love words, you love fiction, but you don't know where to start or how to middle or where to finish. I do. I'm Holly Lyle, and I've been doing this professionally since 1991. And I know how I did what I did to go pro, and I'll be happy to show you what I've learned. Start with my free 3-week flash fiction class at hollyswritingclasses.com.